So our political life often asks for it. It really even demands the moral lens, the theological lens, but our culture doesn't know how to do that. We're not practiced at it. We're not trained in it. We never see it or hear it on media.
We did once. Yeah. We had it once upon a time.
Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he is Chris Owen.
We are What in God's Name, as I've just said. The podcast...
In case you forgot, since the first time you mentioned it.
The podcast of the S1 Project. The mission of the S1 Project is to practice, promote, and educate for the use of moral thinking, theological reflection, and the humanities in general to see more deeply into our shared common life.
Necessary, that shared common life, necessary for a functional democracy.
Yeah. And we think that these lenses, these humanistic lenses, can help us, as I say, see more deeply, but also to see, what do we mean by see more deeply? See the human being. We want to focus on human beings are, and we think the lenses of politics and economics are reductive.
They are reductive. They, at least in the way those conversations are conducted today, Chris, I think fundamentally there's nothing wrong with discussing politics and economics, but and those conversations could be deeper and lead us to a place of human flourishing. They're just not today. So we need to go beyond that, free ourselves from the binaries of economics and politics, which, as we say each week, dominate so much of the discussion in the public square, but which do little to move us towards a place of human flourishing.
I should love it. It's what we do, right? But I just love hearing it. I just think it's so right. It's just so right. And it's so counter to what we're used to or how we're enculturated, what we get from the media. And so what you and I are doing and others, our allies out in the world, it's a reframing.
It is a reframing. Chris, I have no doubt that, you know, should it come to pass that I live long enough to be able to look back on this time, I will do so and think about how this podcast helped me keep my sanity in so many ways during what has been a really, truly, positively insane chapter in American history.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that later in the show. But first, we have our spinny wheel. It's a device we use to begin our shows.
Device is a delicate term.
Bad device. It's a bicycle wheel bolted to a piece of plywood, and we give it a spin. It has a pointer.
Steampunk meets swamp yankee.
Wait. Back up. Steampunk? I don't. All right. So we give it a spin. It lands on one of 16 different core values and key ideas. And we don't know ahead of time what it's going to land on. We do a riff just to get ourselves going, Shayna. The spinny wheel has landed on randomness and playfulness. It's a core value of ours in the S1 Project and on our podcast, What in God's Name. Randomness and playfulness. I just played word association in my head, Shayna, and I'm sure you enjoyed watching that because I know you're in my head. But randomness and playfulness is related in my conceptual universe to creativity and I have more to say about creativity, but it's not coming to me in the moment. You do your riff and see what I can come up with after you.
I think I liked where you were going with creativity, and I think that randomness and playfulness, when brought to the canvas of creativity, invites us to not sort of come in with a preset idea of what where the thing is going, but to let it emerge out of the process. And I think so often what you and I are doing here, because this is not a scripted show, is an act of randomness and playfulness. And I know I come away, you know, a lot of times with clearer thinking of my own. I hear your ideas and I appreciate what you're saying, even when I don't agree with you, because it helps me clarify my thinking. So in a sense, you and I are in the act of creation here, fueled by or supported by randomness and playfulness.
Yeah, so okay.
Helps that emerge.
Thank does you that for help? That. That does help me, and it makes me think of two things. Newness, N-E-W, newness. Creativity leads to something new. And a sense of, there's a mystery to it too. You're talking about when you're creating something, it emerges. And so that has a sense of not knowing, of mystery. Where is this going? It emerges, which can be anxiety producing. I mean, creation can be a kind of a tense thing if you don't quite know exactly how it's going to end up, which connects to our topic for today's show, unless you want to add something.
Randomness and playfulness don't always have a place at the table, depending on what the task is. Sometimes sure. The task just, you know, if your house is on fire, you really don't want the fire department showing up and randomly and playfully deciding like, hey, let's engage with this fire and see what happens. You want them to put the damn fire out. I think particularly where democracy is concerned, the ability to listen to one another and to hone our ideas as opposed to simply having opinions shoved down our throats, the lack of that destabilizes the democratic platform. And I think that's what we're living through right now. Also the point of our show today. So there it is, the tone indicating it is time to move on from the randomness and playfulness of our spinny wheel this morning to the topic of the day, which is, Christopher?
Yeah, this fall on What in God's Name, we've been talking about the upcoming presidential election. And part of the reason for doing that,
let me out of the box.
Right. Right. I know, I've been joking about that this fall, Shana, to let your political colors fly. And it's been a delight to do that. We've been starting with the political and focusing, as I say, on the presidential election. And in each show, we find a moment where we make that pivot that we're promoting in our S1 project. That pivot being taking the political lens and putting a different lens in front of that. Philosophical, moral, theological, and asking a different kind of question. So our political life often asks for, it really even demands the moral lens, the theological lens, but our culture doesn't know how to do that. We're not practiced at it. We're not trained in it. We never see it or hear it on media.
We did once. We had it once upon a time. I mean, I love reading old books and old sermons and old... listening to, you know, the leaders, they would gather in the church and, you know, these things would go on for hours and hours and hours, and people would take an argument and get down and expand it and, you know, points of view. And once upon a time we had it, but man, seem to have lost it.
Deeper reflection. So that's the plan for today, as we are within 2 weeks of the presidential election. And so, Shana, I wanted to get started by taking your temperature. It's just a little phrase, you know, taking someone's temperature, getting a sense of how you're thinking and feeling. And let me frame it this way, and you can reject the frame if you just want to respond to the question. But my frame would be like a four. You get A, B, C, or D. It's multiple choice. So one extreme, you could be in total despair about what's coming in the presidential election. You could be cautiously pessimistic. You could be cautiously optimistic, or you could be elated. So yeah, just taking your temperature, and then I'll be happy to respond myself if you want to hear what my temperature is.
Yeah,
but let's start with you.
I'm still cautiously optimistic. You know, my theory on this is that if all the voters in the United States are a pie called 100%, you divide it down the middle, half Republican, half Democratic. And yes, I understand there are independents, but most of those independents, as experts will tell you, consistently vote Democratic or Republican. So let's just assume that 50% of people vote Republican, 50% vote Democratic. Donald Trump has done nothing but lose from the base. He's lost evangelicals of color. He's lost white evangelicals. He's lost suburban housewives. He's lost women. He's lost young voters. He's done nothing but lose voters. And in fact, now he's losing Republicans. Just this morning, his former longest standing chief of staff, or I guess yesterday, because the New York Times published it, you know, said the guy is a fascist. You've got Liz Cheney out there on the campaign trail. So there are apparently any number of Republicans out there who are going to choose a candidate based on, you know, that candidate's integrity rather than their policies. Principles over policies, I think, is the catchphrase that they're using. So I am cautiously optimistic in that sense that that we're still going to pull this off. And in fact, that it still could be a real landslide that none of the pollsters are seeing coming. That having been said, let me peel the layer back one, because that doesn't begin to get at. I noticed the other day that I am in a I'm in a liminal zone, just sort of ontologically.
Ooh, I like it.
Ontologically, neither here nor there, because we're like in suspended animation here, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because in my worldview, if Donald Trump wins the election, we are wholly, thoroughly, and entirely screwed. And that's not even the worst, because I think it's so clear to me how unhinged how increasingly unhinged he has become as of late, that it wouldn't be at all surprising to me to see J.D. Vance go in there, pull the 25th, get him removed, and then we've got J.D. Vance, who's president of the United States, backed by all the hedge fund and, you know, massive money guys, which may have been the plan all along. Who the hell knows? But it's so I'm going to hold my breath. I think I'll be holding my breath a lot between now and November 5th.
Yeah, and I don't think you're the only one.
It's very stressful.
It is.
It's incredibly stressful.
It is. And that, and so this is, I don't want to pursue this stressfulness right now, but I just make a note of it, because that is a human-centered way to think about and talk about where we are as a people in our shared common life. I mean, once you get, it's a way to get behind the politics, to the spirit of the times, or the animating psychological mindset, which is deeply powerful and motivating.
We need one another.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about our shared common life all the time. We need one another. American citizens, we need one another. Democrats need Republicans, and Republicans need Democrats. Right now, there is no trust between either of these sides. So, you know, more trust as I see more and more Republicans come out and demonstrate that they're willing to speak against Trump, and they're willing to have a backbone and say something that makes sense to me. But you also have a whole bunch of people in office who it's just like, oh my God. So we need one another. And when that fabric breaks down, nobody feels secure. And some of us function as society's canaries, if you will, because we live at the margins. And so we're going to feel that more powerfully and more profoundly. But, you know, to my straight white male counterparts, I want to say, hang in there. You'll get it. It'll wind up on your door, too. It's just a matter of time. So, you know, between now and then, let us pray.
Okay. So you are cautiously optimistic.
And in shock.
And wait, shock? Is that what you mean by your liminal, this liminal space?
Yeah, it's kind of a dissociation. It mimics,
right?
It very much mimics shock, in that it is it's somewhat dissociated state.
Yeah. Okay. I'd love to pursue that again too, a little bit further, but because I think I might be in a somewhat similar state, but let me do the politics first.
Yeah. Do the politics
first.
So
I'm cautiously pessimistic.
What does that even mean? Cautiously pessimistic. You haven't given up hope, but you're okay.
No, it's a great question. What is cautiously pessimistic? mean? Part of what it means is that I've considered the possibility of a Trump victory, and when I imagine that, I recognize that I need to prepare myself for it. So it's a little bit of like preemptive pessimism. And it allows me to, as I say, it allows me to prepare. So cautiously pessimistic means I need to prepare myself for the possibility that he will win. And
well, that
Kamala
some would say that
lose.
That is cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
No, only because I would say, like, I'm aware that I've done the same thing. You know, I was talking to someone the other day and I said, look, if he wins, we've got to get busy. And if Trump wins, we don't have time to like sit down and weep into our shoes. We're going to have to get busy to start building the micro communities necessary to resist what's going to come down the pike. So I think you're cautious pessimist. I think cautiously optimistic and cautiously pessimistic are very similar, but for those of you who prefer the dark side.
Yeah, right, which is me.
Yeah, it's you.
So, but let me instead let me answer the cautiously pessimistic from a not personal psychology point of view, but from an observation of our electoral system point of view, which is Kamala looks like a shoe-in to win the popular vote, and that doesn't do it. And so the way we talked about the Electoral College a couple shows ago, but the way these battleground states are shaping up, it definitely makes me concerned. And so that's another reason why I'm cautiously pessimistic. That's a political take. That's purely observing, you know, and I've been looking at the polls. I mean, we did a show on that too recently and maybe, you know, I don't know what to think about the polls. I look at them when they're favorable, it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Except
they were,
worse.
They were massively wrong during the midterms.
Yeah.
Massively wrong during the midterms. They were massively wrong in the 2020 election. But yeah, no, I really do at this point, I'm almost more focused on what happens the day after the election, because I'm not convinced. I mean, there is enough anxiety on the left right now, and we do have our left more extreme groups, and this whole issue of the Electoral College, they're consistently losing the popular vote and getting elected anyway because of the Electoral College, and that's not democratic. So what happens next? So, all right, so let's move beyond the political.
Yeah, let's see what we can find here.
Let's move beyond
good.
The political for a minute.
Yep.
I'm thinking back on the show that we did about hope. Hope is not rooted in this world. The Havel quote.
Yeah.
Hope is not rooted on what's happening in this world. It is a beyond thing that says, you know, even if the worst possible scenario comes to pass, do I believe that people are inherently good? Are there going to be some really difficult days ahead? Absolutely. Do we have the strength to overcome? I don't know. But I'm going to hope that we can, because without hope, there's nothing. Without hope, there is an abyss. And I'm sure some of our listeners have stood at the edge of that abyss before. I mean, there are things that can happen in each of our lives that can leave us in a place of hopelessness. But anyone who has been there knows, it is not a good place.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me of that. I feel not unlike I would feel if I was in your church and you were preaching it, and which is to say, those words serve to reconnect. They're reminders that there is a deeper reality beyond what we can see and in which we can place our hope.
There are some who will say, Chris, but well, what if you're wrong? What if there is no, what if it turns out that there was no reason to hope? To it, I say, who cares? Did it help us live better? You know what I mean? Right.
Like live as though.
Live I am going to live though. As though, because yeah. I've seen what the alternative looks yeah. like, yeah. and I don't want any yeah. part of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of how faith of any kind is an act of will rather than an act of intellect. You live as though it's true. You don't think. I mean, it affects your thinking, but it's really a commitment of the will to live in a certain way. So there's the hope element, which is interesting because part of the demagogue playbook is stoking fear. And so when I, you know, take the theological turn from the politics to the moral theological, fear comes for me. And hope and fear are... like there's a relation to those things. They're in the same area code. and if I pause to reflect on where I am, the fear, the fear that is stoked by the demagogic approach to politics definitely affects me. Like I get that. I'm not immune to the fear that is mongered.
Well, it's you know, I'm always reminded of the story.
But let me just say this. But not, I don't have the fear that the demagogue wants me to have. Like, I'm not afraid of immigrants taking my job. I don't mean that. I just mean it fear. Like, if you live in a culture of fear, it just kind of infects everything. It mm-hmm. soaks into everything. So anyway, sorry I interrupted you.
It reminds me of the story that comes out of it. I know it comes out of indigenous culture, and I don't know which indigenous tribe the story originated with, but there is an elder explaining to a youngster about the two wolves that live inside of us. One is hope and one is fear.
Oh, is that right?
And the two wolves are constantly, so they're more than in the same zip code, man. They are like within us. Uh-huh. Within each of us, there are two wolves fighting for supremacy. One is love, one is fear. The youngster said to his elder, he said, well, grandfather, which one wins? And the elder said to him, the one we feed. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's this is probably going to be the longest two weeks of our lives or the shortest. I'm not entirely sure yet. I'm just sort of in a blur. But November 5th is right around the corner. And, you know, I would just encourage all of our listeners. You were so focused on the outcome of this election, and for good reason. There is going to be a day after the election, and a day after that, and a day after that. And just reminding people that we are powerless over others, but we are not powerless over ourselves. We can continue to conduct ourselves as people of hope and people of inclusion and people of compassion and people of empathy, people of morality, people of ethics, that we can continue to do. We don't have to get swept up into the cesspool of crap running through the nation right now.
I want to ask you a question before we stop, because you've mentioned the day after the election, and I think it's likely that we're going to see some kind of political violence. That's not a prediction. It just feels likely. Do you agree?
I certainly, I think all of us, having been through January 6th, understand that that is a potential in a way that perhaps before January 6th, we didn't quite wrap our heads around. That having been said, I don't have enough faith in those guys. Like, to be honest with you, they're a bunch of keyboard warriors, and their leaders all went to jail, and I don't think the rest of them have the convictions to get out there and do something that stupid again that's going to absolutely, I mean, they've seen, look, you know, you believe it enough to go to jail for it. I don't know that they do. And you know, of course, the public safety specialist inside of me says you prepare for the worst and hope for the best. So it could happen, but I don't think it will. And that's not to say that there won't be, you know, small pockets of people either getting too ebullient in their celebrations or too angry. Small groups, I don't think we're going to see anything like a January 6th. But I also think it's going to be a Democratic landslide, and I think the Republicans are going to have to go home and lick their wounds and try to figure it out, which they've said they were going to do any number of times and never have done the kind of soul searching that they need to do and will not do until their asses are firmly handed to them. May it be so. May it happen this time. Blessed be, and amen.
And amen. Shana, thank you for helping me think through
where we are, Chris.
And yeah, here we are.
I hope we've been helpful to you, dear listeners, in helping you stay curious.
Go deep.
And shine light.
Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. You can join our generous donors on Patreon by going to Patreon and signing up to be a generous donor.
And thank you for our generous donors and for those of you who are going today, right now, without delay, to sign in at Patreon and keep the wheels turning here at What in God's Name.
You can check us out on our website, s1project.org. Shana, great to be with you today.
Always great to be with you, Chris.